Bigfootsmag.com.
Back to Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yetta. As promised, we have IQ Al-Rasuli with us this morning. Today, we're going to continue our presentation of what one gains if they are observant, if one closely examines and carefully considers, exercising good judgment to be discriminating so as to understand what the Quran and Hadith of Muhammad have to say. We're going to undertake this review of the Quran and Hadith, bringing up some things that you might think of, well, that's a small detail, but if a book claims to be perfect, as the Quran does, if it claims to be inerrant, as the Quran does, if it claims to be word for word inspired by God, which the Quran does, and you can show any error in it, large or small, then you have undermined its entire credibility. Now, the reason that this is a worthy goal and the reason that IQ Al-Rasuli and I are going to continue down this path is because Islam is the most corrosive political and religious dogma ever conceived by man. Nothing man has ever conceived has been as deadly, has been as destructive, has been as damning to the human condition as Islam. So anything that we say that helps our listeners understand that Islam is false, that it is unreliable, puts people in a position to say, then the loving, the courageous, the compassionate thing to do is to free the world from this horrible and corruptive deception. IQ Al-Rasuli, it's my pleasure to welcome you to be part of the program again. How are you today?
I'm fine, and it's always my pleasure to be with you.
IQ Al-Rasuli is the author of a series of books called Lifting the Veil. You can buy them at Amazon.com. The advantage of buying his books is that he provides the evidence to back up every one of the claims that he has made during this show and so many more that will help prepare you to engage in this battle with us. You know, IQ, I read a headline story this morning. I'm just going to quote a couple of lines from it to show just how wrong people are. It's what this reminds me of is the things like the stupidity of America invading Afghanistan and Iraq and making bad situations worse as a result of not being able to deal with reality, being unable to recognize the consequence of one's actions. This is an editorial that appeared in CNN. It was written by Awa Damon, who is the senior international correspondent for CNN. It also appeared in the Turkish Policy Quarterly. She is obviously a Muslim. The conversations with a woman in Syria. Now, this woman in Syria is wearing a hijab. She is raising her voices to be heard, she says, because women also want freedom. This is our Syria as well. We are fighting here in Syria for the freedom of women. Now, my friend, if the fundamentalist Muslims, the Mujahideen that are waging war against the secular Assad regime, if they prevail, will women have more freedom or less freedom?
Have no freedom. Zero. Full stop.
Yeah.
She is trying to tell the world, like the Egyptian women and the Tunisian women and the Libyan women before they overthrew Mubarak and Gaddafi, that they too wanted to have freedom. Under Sharia, a woman and a female of the human species is only one little step higher the ladder of evolution than domestic animals. By the way, there was another thing that I would like our listeners to know. Two scholars of the top university of Al-Azhar in Egypt. Al-Azhar right. is equal to the Vatican. For the Sunni Muslims, Al-Azhar is equal to the Vatican for the Catholics.
Yes.
They have declared publicly in Arabic, in YouTube, if somebody can Google it, Islam and cannibalism. They have declared in public that the Muslims can cannibalize dead Christians and Jews.
Eat them.
This is not a joke.
it is pretty astonishing, the nature of Islam. And if you look for the same edifice for the Shia Muslims, it would be the writings of the Grand Ayatollah al-Sistani and the Ayatollah Khomeini. He wrote a little green book that is the Bible, if you will, for Shia Muslims. In it, he has entire chapters as to how to properly engage in pedophilia with children as young as 1 year old, how to properly engage in the practice of bestiality, having sex with animals. And so what you're dealing with here is an incredibly perverse religion. Now, that said, the points that we're going to make here initially will seem just like we're picking on Islam, like, okay, so what's the big deal? But again, keep in mind, this horrible doctrine prevails because it corrupts people into believing that it is the perfect and inerrant word for God. And at the moment you show them that that isn't even remotely true, you begin questioning in a Muslim mind that lives in a free society, and Islam will leave them under that basis. And when we do this in a free society, we make it much more difficult for Muslims to perpetrate acts of terror on our soil, because these questions will rattle in their brain, and a Muslim that is questioning is not going to be a suicide bomber. So here's the next one on our list, IQ. The Quran says that the number of days of creation are 8, while the Torah says specifically that there are only 6, and that Allah did not rest because he was not tired.
They continue also that there were 7 heavens and 7 earths created, when only one is mentioned in the Bible. As we agreed, I would like to recite to the listeners the chapter and verse mentioning this, if you don't mind.
Please, yes.
The chapter is called Al-Fussilat, 41.9. It says, say, kul, that's Arabic, is it that ye deny him, that is Allah, who created the earth in 2 days? He set on the earth mountains standing firm high above it in 4 days? And in accordance with the needs, those who seek sustenance, so he completed them as 7 firmaments in 2 days. 2 + 4 + 2 = 8.
Oh, come on, you're being reasonable. You're being reasonable here. What right do you have to be reasonable? You know, what's interesting is that on the Shattering Myths program over the last 3 months, we have been detailing the Torah's creation account. And one of the interesting things about the creation account is that the 6 days from the perspective of the Creator at creation now can be actually calibrated. You know, the concept of relativity, that time does not move at equal speeds based upon the perspective of the observer. If you are observing time, for example, on a photon of light, time slows to the point that it no longer even moves. But the greater velocity and the greater mass that you're in the presence of, the more time slows. And so we are actually now able to calculate the speed to which time flowed at creation. So Yahweh gives a creation account. He says, this is what I did. This is the order that I did it in. This is the amount of time I took to do it. Now, we actually have now the measure of how fast a clock moved at creation from the perspective of the Creator relative to that creation, because we can measure the cosmic microwave background radiation of the universe, which is the residue of the Big Bang. By the way, Yahweh actually uses the term Big Bang. He said, I created the Big Bang. But in that, we find that time has been stretched 10 to the 12th power. If you take the number of days the universe is old, at about 15 billion years old, and you divide that by 10 to the 12th power, do you know how many 24-hour days creation took for us to view it as 15 billion years looking back on it?
No idea.
6 days.
Fantastic. This is an eye-opener.
Yes, Yahweh said, in fact, even in his creation account, he says, you need to use relativity. You need to understand the relative nature of light and time to understand the timeline that I am presenting here. And when you, now we have the means to do that. We know exactly the concept of relativity. We know that time does not flow equally from all places. And we have the cosmic microwave radiation, which is stretched, the time wave is, the wave is stretched 10 to the 12th power. When you do the math, it's exactly 6 24-hour days. Yahweh's statement has been proved to be precisely accurate. Allah's is wrong.
Allah is always wrong.
He is always wrong. Now, the next one is interesting. It says that the sun, I particularly love this one, and you know what I love about this one, is that there's, you know, there was this whole movie produced called The Miracles of the Quran, talking about how all the things that the Quran predicted that would have been unknown to an idiot living in Arabia back at the time of Muhammad. And yet, you know, they go through all this stuff. And there isn't, they don't come up with a single thing that has any credibility. They never mention this one, which is that the sun, which of course is a million times larger than the earth, goes to bed every night in a puddle of murky water. And that that where the sun goes to bed in this puddle of murky water every night, there's a bunch of extraterrestrials that live there. And also the Quran says that Dhru al-Qarnayn, which is Alexander the Great, went to those extraterrestrials. It was part of his journeys. He went to those extraterrestrials and preached Islam to them. Bet you didn't know that that was all true.
I do. It's so true. It's written in Al-Kahf. Chapter 18, verse 83, it says, they asked thee concerning Zulkarnain. Zulkarnain, that means with the two horns, which is the helmet of Alexander the Great. Say, I will rehearse to you something of his story. Mm-hmm. Until when he reached the setting of the sun, he found it set in a spring of murky water. Near it he found the people to whom he preached Islam. That is Al-Kahf 18.83. I like people who are listening to double check us to see whether we are telling them the truth or we are lying.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite stories. Yeah, it's one of my favorite stories in the Quran. I've been, and you know, my ability to recite the Quran verbatim is not nearly as good as yours, but my paraphrase of that Quranic passage was pretty accurate.
100% accurate. You don't have to actually use the English or Arabic language.
Yeah, it is. It's astonishing now. I mean, just beyond comprehension that you could have 1.5 billion people poisoned by the most destructive, the most deadly religion ever conceived by a man when it says things that are this remarkably untrue. Alexander the Great did not go and visit extraterrestrials. Products. Hello and welcome back to Shattering Myths. There was a statement that was made in the last segment that I would like to expand on, and I know of no one better to do that than with IQ al-Rasuli. The comment is from the Quran that Dhru al-Qarnayn, which is the two-horned, he is Alexander the Great in the Quran, that he preached Islam. Therefore, he was a Muslim prophet. So I have to ask you, IQ, do we know whether or not Alexander the Great was Islamic, or do we have some evidence that says that that Alexander the Great was a practitioner and promoter of the pagan Greek religion?
Pagan Greek religion. He had nothing to do with Islam. Islam came after him by 900 years.
Yes, and every time that you see an inscription that is that was created by those around Alexander the Great, were they not promoting the standard pantheon of Greek gods?
Of course, 100%.
Okay. So for the Quran to claim that Alexander the Great, a very well-known historic figure, who was resolutely pagan in the Greek pantheon of gods, was a Muslim, does that make Alexander the Great a Muslim prophet?
No, but from the point of view of the plagiarism of Muhammad in his Quran, everybody he mentioned in the Quran became a Muslim. Moses became a Muslim. Jesus was a Muslim. Al-Asbat, the tribes of Israel, also Muslimun, which is plural. Haran, Aaron, was a Muslim. Yeah. Mary was a Muslima, that means a female.
Yeah.
David, King David was a Muslim. Solomon was a Muslim. Adam was a Muslim. So okay. I don't know whether we have left anybody out.
No. So since the most... the best documented, most accurate, and most comprehensive historical presentation in terms of an ancient writing. By far the most copies, the far the most ancient copies, by far the most detailed presentation of ancient history is the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms that presents the actual Adam, the actual Noah, the actual Moshe, the actual Dode, who we call David, the actual Abraham. And because what we know of them from this precisely detailed and accurate historical presentation is that that they were the antithesis of Islamic. It's just like the case with Alexander the Great. For the Quran to say that they were Islamic prophets is you would have to be an absolute ignorant and irrational fool to believe that, wouldn't you?
You're being very generous to them. They have to be utterly stupid.
Yes.
Without brain themselves, absolutely none. Because nowhere in the whole of the Arab history would you find the name Abraham or Moses or Jesus. This was plundered, pirated, plagiarized, and or perverted by Muhammad from the Bible, and he inserted in his Quran. That's what happened.
Yes. Yeah, he's actually plagiarized it from the Talmud. If you make the comparisons between the Talmud and the Quran passages, there's great similarities. There's almost no similarity between the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms and the Quran. And by similarity, I mean that there are passages in the Talmud which Muhammad plagiarized and then twisted to serve his agenda. But the argument that I get the most at Prophet of Doom from those who have read five paragraphs and haven't got any further is that the statement that I made that Muhammad was Allah's lone spokesperson, that he was the only wannabe prophet of Islam, and that Islam can be nothing more nor nothing less than Muhammad. And the constant refrain that I get from those who are ignorant is that that's not true. The Quran itself says that Esau, who they now call Jesus, Moses, Dode, who they call David, Abraham, at all were all Muslim prophets. And my point is, that's impossible. That'd be like me saying that George Washington was my personal prophet, that George Washington lived his life to announce my arrival. You'd have to be an absolute idiot to think that was true.
But they are idiots. They're criminal. Look at them even in the modern 21st century. They claim, for example, that they, the Arabs and Muslims, produced or introduced the concept of the zero in mathematics, when everybody knows it was the Indians, the Hindus.
Right.
But they claim everything. Everything
right.
Good, they claim as if they created it, as if nobody before them created anything. And yet the whole of Islamic science was based on the pagan religions and the pagan civilizations.
It is true. It is all nothing but a mishmash of lies, and it's amazing that so many people have been dumbed down to believing these lies are true. When we return after the commercial break, we will consider another of the Quran's blunder. I am Yada, and we are with IQ, Al Rasuli. To Shattering Myths. I'm here with IQ Al Rasuli. IQ's series of books is called Lifting the Veil, The True Faces of Muhammad and Islam. You can buy his books at Amazon.com. Next is another myth. This is actually a two-part myth. We find the Quran telling us that Haman was the prime minister of Pharaoh during the time that Moses was negotiating for the release of the children of Israel. But that's not true, is it?
No. As usual, Muhammad was wrong by at least 1,000 years, because according to the of Esther 1,000 years earlier.
Yeah, actually, 1,000 years later. Xerxes was responsible for Babylon and Assyria, and of course the Exodus had took place 1,000 years prior to that time. But the interesting thing also is that the Quran even speaks of the threat that was going to be perpetrated. And I'd have forgotten if the Quran says the threat was going to be perpetrated on Moses or on Pharaoh, but I think it was on Moses, that he was going to be crucified. And yet, speaking of great distances of time, crucifixion as a form of death was actually invented by the Assyrians 500 years after the Exodus. So no matter what they attempt to say, whether it was, here's a guy, I can list the name of a person to give you credibility, and they miss it by 1,000 years and by a 1,000 miles in terms of country and time and place, he even got crucifixion wrong. It hadn't been invented at the time of Egypt. There's no, you know, the Egyptians recorded everything. There is absolutely no depiction of anything remotely close to crucifixion. We don't see it until the Assyrians invented it some 500 years later.
Yeah, but the Pharaoh, but the Quran continues that Pharaoh commanded Haman to build the Tower of Babel in Egypt, when according to the Bible, it was built in Babylon, in modern-day Iraq, my own country of birth.
Yeah, by the way, the Babel and Babylon share a root in terms of the etymological basis of the name. It is the Tower of Babel because it was built in Babylon. The very name of the tower is based upon the name of Babel. Babel, by the way, the name of the country and the name of the tower is from the Hebrew word which means to confuse. Babel is the Hebrew word. We even use it today in our common vernacular. You know, to Babylon, it is to confuse, it is to corrupt. And we have absolutely found the Tower of Babel as it was presented in the story found in the Torah. It exists in Mesopotamia, in Babylon, and it was named the Tower of Babel because it was a tower in Babylon. You know, you really shouldn't have to be all that smart to get some of these facts right. But you have to wonder, was Muhammad really this stupid? Or was Muhammad kind of like today's politicians? Like the President of the United States gave a State of the Union message where nothing he said over the course of an hour was actually true. And to be that dishonest, you have to think that the audience who is listening to you is dumber than a stone and is not going to hold you accountable. Do you think Muhammad just thought that everybody listening to him was an idiot so that no one would care that he was making all this up?
Yes, he knew he was right. As far as the pagans, Arabs were concerned, they had absolutely no idea what he was talking about. And considering the fact that they truly believed that he was the messenger of Allah, they wouldn't go against him. This is why Muhammad went against the Jews of Arabia, or Judaized Arabs of Arabia, and the Christians of Arabia, because they knew that he was a charlatan. They knew he was a pathological liar. They knew he was a child molester and a terrorist. And they wouldn't believe in him, and they wouldn't follow him. So he had these witnesses, like any criminal, eliminated. And that's exactly what he did. He eliminated them.
Yeah. You know, your next point is one of the great contradictions in the Quran. Most of this comes up in the Kaw Surah, the second Surah, which is the most anti-Semitic Surah in the Quran, also its longest. But the Quran alleges that it was Allah who preferred and therefore chose the Israelites above all other people, and yet most of the Quran exists as an angry rant showing Allah's hatred of the people he allegedly chose. Now, how is that possible?
Yeah, it's possible because as far as the Muhammad and Muslims are concerned, the descendants of the Israelites, so-called the Jews, are actually not the same as the Israelites. There is a complete break. The Israelites existed under the time of Moses, and after that, anybody else gods who descended from them, is considered a pathological liar as far as the Bible is concerned, that they corrupted the Bible. The Jews corrupted their Bible, and the Christian corrupted their Bible, so only Islam remains with the perfect Quran. You know, it's amazing, because Al-Baqarah, which is chapter 2, verse 47, it says, O children of Israel, call to mind the special favor which I, Allah, bestowed upon you, and that I preferred you to all others. In Arabic it says, وَأَنِّي فَضَلْتُكُمْ عَلَى الْعَالَمِينَ. And the next verse, 122, again he says, O children of Israel, call to mind the special favor I bestowed on you, and that I preferred you to all others. According to the Quran, it was Allah who preferred the children of Israel above all other peoples. And it is not that the Israelites who declared that they were chosen people. The Quran specifically says that it was Allah who preferred them above all other people. But nonetheless, as I said, as far as Islam is concerned, Muhammadan style, the Jews and the Christians are not actually the Jews followers of Moses and the Christians followers of Jesus.
You mentioned the term Jews. You know the actual scriptural term, the term that appears in the Torah for Jews? Their real name? They are Yehudim. Yahudim.
From Yehuda, from the tribe of Yehuda.
Right. They are Yehudim. You know that Yehudim is plural of Yehuda, and that Yehudim is a compound word, as are almost all of the names in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. And the first syllable of, in fact, the first two syllables of Yehudim is from Yahuwah. It means related to Yahuwah. The very name of the people is related to Yahuwah. So how is it possible that they were chosen by Allah when their name means related to Yahuwah?
Well, it's not possible. We know it's not possible. You know it's not possible. I know it's not possible. And anybody who reads and knows the Bible as well as the Quran knows it's impossible. But we are dealing with indoctrination in here. We have 1,500 million people who are totally indoctrinated. And I want to say that people who are listening to understand something else. The Muslim in a Muslim land, and many of them, well, about 1,250 million of them, especially outside Arab land, they don't speak Arabic. They have no idea of the Arabic language. So they depend on their so-called religious people to guide them. And those who speak Arabic, even if they know the facts and they know that the Quran is not telling the truth, they cannot say anything because they will be butchered.
They'd be killed. Right.
It is an act of terror. The whole thing, the whole of Islam, is based on terror.
Yeah, he who fears will obey is what the Quran says.
Absolutely.
One of the things that always struck me as interesting, if people were not ignorant that are religious, there wouldn't be a single Muslim on the planet today, because the Quran requires the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms to be the antithesis of what they currently are. It requires them to be totally corrupted from what they were. The Quran actually says that the rabbis corrupted their Quran after Muhammad came to embarrass Muhammad. And yet, if we go from the oldest extant Quran is somewhere in the 8th century, and we can go to the 3rd century BCE, and we have a mountain of manuscripts of the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms that were found in the caves above Qumran. And so, 1,000 years before Muhammad's Quran finds written form, we have thousands of documents which affirm that the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms have not been corrupted. And so the evidence is absolutely clear, totally unequivocal. The Torah, Prophets, and Psalms are uncorrupted, and yet the Quran requires them to be totally corrupted. The moment the Dead Sea Scrolls were found, it was over for Islam. Its primary claim was torn asunder. Why is it that there isn't a Muslim on the planet that can realize that?
You mentioned something that if somebody has studied the Quran and, you know, understands it, no, there will be no Muslim left on earth.
Right.
You know who said that to corroborate you? Al-Qardawi. Al-Qardawi, in a TV interview in Arabic, said to his interviewer that had it not been that Allah ordained in the Quran that any Muslim leaves Islam will be slaughtered, there would would have been no Muslims on earth. Al-Qardawi, the spiritual leader of the Muslim Brotherhood in Arabic, it's also on YouTube, so if somebody doesn't believe me, he said it. He said there would have been no Islam had it not been for the terror of being exterminated, if you change your mind. Amazing.
You know, yeah, it reminds me of my relationship with Jerry Falwell, who's probably the most famous American Protestant pastor. And I came to Jerry Falwell with a white paper over a six-hour meeting where I revealed to Jerry that everything that he was preaching about Christianity was untrue, and systematically revealed that everything he was saying was untrue. And at the end of that period of time, he says, yeah, that's everything you've said is accurate. But if I were to say any of these things, I'd be labeled a kook. The people that fill the pews of my church would no longer arrive, and the envelopes that I receive filled with checks to support my university would no longer come. And so here's a man who was preaching Christianity, and he knew that what he was saying was a lie. And what you're saying here about the founder of the leader of the Muslim Brotherhood, not the founder, but the leader of the Muslim Brotherhood, is that the leader of the Muslim Brotherhood knows for certain that the Quran is an absolute pile of rubbish, that it is a lie, that it is not true, that it is not credible, and that anybody with an open mind and the freedom to choose would choose to abandon Islam. And yet he is still promoting it.
Amazing, isn't it?
It is amazing. And I've always known that to be the case. Like the popes who claim to have the seat of St. Peter, they know that they're full of it. They know that Roman Catholicism is nothing but a pile of rubbish. They know it. But it empowers them. It gives them the life that they crave. It gives them control over people, so they continue to promote the myth. That's why religion is such a horrible thing. Still do it. Hello, welcome back to the final segment of Shattering Myths for today. My pleasure to be here with IQ Al-Rasuli, one of my very favorite people in the world. IQ has done something that so few people are willing to do. He has invested the time to come to understand the most deadly and destructive human institution ever conceived, and he now has the courage and compassion to share what he has learned. And he's doing so because he wants the world freed of this horrible menace that is Islam. Returning to another of the Quran's blunders, the Quran claims that that the land of Yisrael, which is a compound of three Hebrew words, Ish is the Hebrew word for individual, Sarah is Sarah's name, the mother of the covenant. Sarah means to engage and to endure, to struggle with, to live with, to be empowered by, and El is the Hebrew word for God. So Yisrael means to individuals who engage and endure with God. Allah, which means cursed and arrogant and misleading in Hebrew, claims in his Quran, which is another Hebrew word and supposed to be in the pure Arabic Quran, to promise the land to the Israelites. But nonetheless, the Muslims the world over claim Israel to be theirs. Now, how can that be possible if God promised it to one group of people and yet Jews around the world, or Muslims around the world, are willing to terrorize and kill anyone to claim it as theirs?
This is possible because again and again we come to the same conclusion or the same foundation, indoctrination. The verse, by the way, it's amazing. I'll tell you why.
Okay.
Maidah 5:21, it says, "O my people Israel." In this part, it was Moses talking.
Mm-hmm.
He's talking to his people. "O my people Israel, enter the holy land which Allah has assigned unto you." "Ya qawmi idkhulu al-ard al-muqaddasata allati kataba Allahu lakum." Now, the Muslims tell us all the time that the Quran's grammar is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Crap. Because al-ard al-muqaddasata is a female. And they say allati kataba. Kataba means written. It should have been katabaha. It's missing an H-A. And that alone is a grammatical error of this first magnitude. So you see, read the Arabic of the Quran, you will find hundreds upon hundreds of grammatical errors. Forget about the historical errors, the theological, you know, contortions and twisting. The grammar of the Quran is full of error. The prose of the Quran is objectionable. It is repetitive. It is thick.
Yeah, it is one of the things that you quickly realize when you become adept at translation and how accurate translation is presented, where words that have to be supplied to make a sentence grammatically correct or for that sentence to make any sense have to be added, and they're either added in italics or they're added within brackets on accurate translations. And what you find is that about 20% of the words that are necessary for the Quran to be grammatically correct and to make any sense are not existent in the original text. So 20% of the Quran is missing. It's just not there. It has to be supplied for the sentences to be grammatically correct or for them to convey any kind of a reasonable message.
It is full of parentheses. It is full of parentheses. Because the reader, even if he's in perfect in English language, when it's translated, they cannot understand what it says without these additional explanations.
Right. And you talk about repetitiveness, too. I think that's one of the interesting things. If you look at what's called the Meccan surahs, the first 100 or so that were allegedly revealed, there's only one theme. And all of those, and that theme is played over and over and over again, which is that the Meccans are saying that Muhammad was a liar, that he was demon-possessed, that he had no inspiration from God. Those who knew him best said that Muhammad was a complete fraud, and they said it over and over again. And Allah's response, who is Muhammad's response, is, "My God's going to get you in the end." That because you've said these things of me, Allah has created horrible tortures for you, and he is going to personally torture you in hell. And that argument is played over and over again so many times in the Quran that you just say, okay, enough already. What's your problem? We've been here with IQ Al-Rasuli, my very dear friend, and we will be back with IQ the next two Fridays on recorded programs that he and I have recorded previously so that we might continue to expose and condemn the ideology of Islam submission.
Many Americans suffer from digestive problems, often totally unaware they're not absorbing essential nutrients from foods and supplements. Dr. Peter Glidden is aware of the...